This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 28, Terrible Writing Advice. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach Podcast. We got Michael and Angie in the house.
Hello, how are you?
And today our special guest is Mr. J.P. Bobien.
Bobien.
Did I say that right?
Bobien. Bobien.
Bobien.
Close enough.
Bobien. There we go.
J.P. Bobien is a writer, artist, and YouTuber who grew up in the beautiful countryside of East Tennessee. After studying history in college, he worked a half dozen different jobs before deciding to pursue a career in writing. He released his first book, Aeon Legion Labyrinth, in 2016, and to this day cannot spell labyrinth without spell check. He also created the popular YouTube channel, Terrible Writing Advice, where he gives totally genuine writing advice without any sarcasm at all.
Like none, Sarah.
Yeah, none. His internet pseudo-fame now threatens to balloon his ego beyond any control. Welcome, JP.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is totally fun. So I was just looking, and your YouTube channel is just shy of 150,000 subscribers. How crazy is that?
Well, it's about 150,000 subscribers more than I thought I would have.
Oh, you're kidding me. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
and you know, so sarcastic that it's almost cringy. There are moments when it's cringy.
So this world of writing, what had you give up your half dozen different jobs and take on writing? What made you make that leap?
Kind of almost an accident and a fluke, kind of, in a way. After I took my history major, I was history major at Maryville College, graduated with a Bachelor's of Arts in History. Then I went, I graduated at 2008, right when the economy just tanked.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I had great prospects going out. I found myself working in retail. Eventually, my parents convinced me to go work for my dad, who was a partner in a machine shop. And so at that point, I started learning blue collar skills. So I worked some white collar jobs. I worked some blue collar jobs. I went back to college, got an associate's in mechanical engineering technology. That was kind of interesting, but it still wasn't quite my thing. I worked with my dad in his shop for a while. Eventually, he moved me behind the desk there to help with quoting work. So then I was right back into white collar work again. And I kept bouncing around from thing to thing, and none of it really worked for me.
Well, at least you didn't try a red light industry.
Red light.
Red light. Blue collar. Get it?
Blue.
White collar, black collar, red light. Do you get it?
I get it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that was a temptation, though, right?
It wasn't very sarcastic, was it? It just wasn't quite funny. It was almost funny.
Yeah, we're dealing with the king of sarcasm here,
right?
We have to throw some of that in there. Well, excellent. So then the writing, where did that come in?
Well, I had started a number of writing projects, I guess you could call them, before I'd even started my main book, but I'd never intended to be a writer. I took a creative writing course my senior year of college for my history major because we needed some filler electives to fill in. So, but at the time I was going to be a video game developer.
Okay.
So yeah, that was my dream job. I used to make fun of people who wanted to be a writer. I think, that'll never come back to bite me. So, but I took a creative writing course because I wanted to learn how to make my video game scripts better.
Because
when I was teenage years, I downloaded this little RPG maker program and I tried to make my own games, and they were most writers, they have their early work where they get their awful out. That's where I got all my awful out, was these really crappy RPG maker games where there was chosen one storylines, and it was all the characters were just walking stereotypes, and it was all just terrible. And all those games are buried in my hard drive to this day and will never be seen by anybody. Mm-hmm. But after I took the creative writing course, I've wrote some short stories for that. None of them were particularly good, but I got good feedback on one of them where, like, although the story wasn't good, the idea I had engaged people for some reason. Mm. So I thought, well, I got something creative going on there, but I kind of filed that away for later and didn't really think about it too much. I cut my storytelling teeth, though, on tabletop games with my friends, Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, like I sometimes recommend writers that if you're into nerd stuff and you want to get the storytelling part down, start a tabletop game with your friends and be a dungeon master or a game master of a game. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest benefit of that is when you're just worried about the storytelling, you're not distracted by prose writing. You're just working on the story and you have an audience there that will give you instant feedback.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So like if you've got like a cliche character there, you will watch as all your fellow players there roll their eyes at you. Mm-hmm. And start making fun of your characters. Mm. And like, you'll instantly know it does not work. Mm-hmm. And then you have to like change it up real quick to keep your audience engaged. Because if they lose interest in the game's going to die. So you have to keep it going. So I kind of learned to cut my storytelling teeth there, basically. And then flash forward a few years when I was still working for my dad, I had this neat idea for a story about time travel. And I thought, well, could I make a campaign out of it? And it's like, well, no, it's got all these, because the characters were the core motive behind, or the core inspiration I had behind the idea. Mm-hmm. So I basically decided, well, I should maybe turn it into a book. I can do that. Give this whole writing thing a try. Mm-hmm. So... Mm-hmm. And I was, like I said, at that point, I tried a whole bunch of other jobs and I was just unsatisfied, but I'd saved up all my money though. I wasn't a big spender, so I had quite a bit of money in the bank. So I thought, well, if I really wanted to give this creative career thing a go, I've got the resources to do it and I've got the idea. And so I think I fleshed out my first couple of drafts and then things were kind of winding down at my dad's shop in a ways. So I thought, well, I'm just, might as well go ahead and give it a try. Mm. So,
mm. Oh, that's great.
Interesting. I wonder if Dungeons and Dragons has seen a resurgence since Stranger Things came out. What do you think?
Oh, that would be an interesting thing to check.
Yeah. Have you watched Stranger Things?
I've not seen it. No, I don't actually watch a lot of TV. Okay. I don't even own a TV. I get all my stuff through the internet pretty much exclusively. So my mom, like, I know, like, basically what's going on it because my mom is always talking about it to me, even though, like, I kind of only get half of it half the time.
Well, excellent. Let's talk a little bit about how terrible writing advice came to be.
This is awesome. I actually will send links to some of my clients and say, you really need to watch this. Because, you know, I can say it. I can say, okay, really, you need to be interested in feedback. You really need to. And all the day long, they see that. And then they're like, okay, I get it.
It's just like, please, no more sarcasm. I promise to be good.
Yeah.
The origin of terrible writing advice, I think it really started way back again when I was at Maryville College and I was taking that creative writing course. And I was trying to find a few self-help books to try to help me understand the basics, because the creative writing course I took there, they just kind of threw you into writing short stories and they didn't explain how any of it worked. They're just like, you write short stories and we critique them, you know, and they didn't really cover the basics. So I was trying to find something that would show me that. I read a number of learn to write novels that they had in the library, but mostly I found that they were too advanced for my level. Mm. I didn't like, because back then I was just like, what do you mean there's plot and setting and characters? I thought there was just like all this stuff you threw together and it just worked like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really understand any of that, but I did find one novel that I didn't quite understand all of it, but it was entertaining enough that I could get through it. And it was called How Not to Write a Novel.
I knew it. Yeah. I knew you were going to say that. I own several copies and I loan that thing out. Like, I'm the library. I'm telling you, that book had me in stitches.
Yeah.
Especially Santa Claus as a romantic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, just laughing out loud. I knew that's what you're going to say. I'm so psychic today.
I really like they got this online quiz you can take that goes along with it, too. And it's great. Because if you answer all the questions like an actual experienced writer, when you get to the end of the quiz and add up your score, it always tells you, it's like, oh, no, you don't know anything. You need to buy our novel. in order to like understand how to really write. And then like if you answer all the questions like incorrectly, like, oh, you should put as many Mary Sues as possible in your story and all that, like the end result is like you are so smart and a genius that only you can appreciate the high level of intellect our book has to offer, so you should buy our book.
That's funny. And you know, yeah, like, the authors are delightful. I've, you know, been back and forth with them, and you know, I'd love to have them on our on one of our panels at one of our writers' conferences. But they are delightful, and I should tell you, all of you out there, this is where I really got clear about email writing and the proper, you know, where that comma goes and where that period goes if you're saying hi so and so, and then where the paragraph doesn't. It's just like, it's hilarious because they obviously know exactly what they're doing. Howard Middlemark and Sandra Newman are the authors, but anyway, delightful human beings as well, and hilarious.
Yeah,
but I think because I read that when I was in Maryville College, and that kind of, the idea kind of stuck with me just in the background of my mind. Then before I got my first book out, I was thinking about ways to market it, because you're supposed to like have this marketing plan before you get your book out and everything. Yep. And so I was brainstorming things I could possibly do. And so what I did is I made this list of various marketing approaches I could take with the book, and I sorted them in order of, I think the way I had it sorted was the easiest and most conventional ideas was what I was going to try to do first. Mm-hmm. So things like start up a social media account, that's really easy and everyone says you should do that. So I did all of those things first. Then I got to the ideas that are conventional but are like require a lot more effort, like setting up a website. I went ahead and, you know, did all that too. And then I think below that, though, I had some ideas that were like much more high effort, but were still fairly conventional, like, you know, go to a convention, buy a table in the artist alley in the convention to sell your book there, and some other things like that. Then at the bottom of my list, I had ideas that I just called just crazy ideas, just various insane, desperate things. When I'm running out of money and absolutely have just got my back into a corner, I will try these various crazy things. And one of those was start a YouTube channel. There was nothing else there, no ideas. It was just like, I should look into maybe starting a YouTube channel. I always like creative things. And so I thought, well, I mean, video editing would be a fun thing to learn. And if I'm running out of all my other ideas, I might as well, you know, try something new, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, it was like low on the priority, though. Mm. You know, it wasn't something I didn't like think very highly of. Well, then after I got my book out, I think it was January, February, sometime like that, or it was early 2016. And throughout the year, I burned up all of my marketing ideas one by one. Most of them really didn't help because I was still kind of an unknown, you know, nobody. It's really hard to get that first momentum. Mm-hmm. And a lot of authors never find success with their first book anyways. It takes like five or six before you really start stacking up the Amazon algorithm to where it actually notices you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like I had, well, like I said, years ago, I saved up all my money and kind of just, you know, stupidly, like it's considered a stupid move by most writers, but I put everything out on the line just to try to make this work because I knew it was the only way I was going to get myself to do it, because I don't work very well if I'm in a safe, comfortable position. Mm-hmm. So I put myself in this awkward position. So my money was starting to tick down. And at the end of the year, I was like, well, it's time for the crazy ideas. And I thought, well, was there any other conventional ideas I can do before I start going to my crazy ideas? And I thought, well, I could give writing advice like practically every other author on the planet. Yeah. But then I thought, man, that's a joke because I've only got one book out. I'm certainly not very qualified to give actual writing advice. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm still kind of an amateur author. I figured out a lot of the pitfalls because I've fell into most of them along the way. But just the idea was just kind of humorous to me. So I thought, well, I don't know. I could do that from a humorous perspective. And then I thought back to the, like, how not to write a novel, and I thought, well, no, there's a hook. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I went on to YouTube to see if the hook had been done yet, to see if anyone else had done that, because I typed in, like, bad writing and terrible writing and awful writing, and I got links to individual videos to people who do, like, actual writing advice things, just talking about, like, terrible pieces of advice they had been given, but no one had made that their central thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought, so the hook's available. So then I wrote out the scripts for my first three videos in just a couple of days. And then I spent about a week editing those first three videos. Those were the Dystopia, the Mary Sue, and the Fantasy Races.
Mm-hmm. So how do you do the animation?
Photoshop.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, it's very just basic Photoshop-like characters. I probably really should do these in Illustrator because they're actually vector images that I'm working in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. But I'm so stubborn about getting out of my comfort zone, like I said, so I kind of just kept everything in Photoshop.
Well, so. Props to you. You know, yeah. I just recently stopped doing things like flyers and Illustrator kind of things in Word. In yeah. Word. That's what I was doing.
I got her converted over to InDesign.
Yeah, so now I'm video editing. Yeah. I'm video editing now too. I'm actually really good at it. Thing is you don't realize what you can do if you don't just like dive in. Yeah. You know, give it a shot.
That's the thing. I guess that was my takeaway from my experience with this whole like YouTube adventure thing, as I call it, is just the fact that I owe my success to essentially experimentation.
Yeah.
All of the conventional things I tried, every last one of them fell flat and got me no attention and didn't drive any book sales. And I remained obscure. And the only thing that really seemed to help break out of that was just trying to, like I said, going to my crazy idea list is what finally got me somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
Yeah. And, you know, the animations are great because you've got so much subtext in the animations. And you almost have to watch them at full screen more than once just to get the humor that's behind the words that, you know, that the stuff that's not being said that you've animated on the page. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I think that's why my videos have such a high engagement rating.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of YouTube videos that people will watch where they'll start playing it and then they'll move to another tab and then they'll work on something while that plays in the background. Mm-hmm. And my videos are very short, so it's hard to do that. So it kind of forces you to actively watch.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and yeah.
Another thing that really works is the humor, too, because human beings actually learn better from humor than they do from just being told, this is how you do it. So by taking that opposite approach, then they learn also, this doesn't work, and they recognize themselves in it. So it's actually this really useful tool. As well. Like I send people to your YouTube channel to help train them, especially when they're stubborn. When I have a client that's particularly stubborn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because I know something I always try to do in the videos is for a lot of tropes, I always try to show what can be problematic about them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's it's not enough to just say like, don't write Mary Sue's. Mary Sue's are bad. You kind of have to dig a little further and show exactly how they hurt the story, their destructive effects that they have on the narrative. And yeah, I found that humor is a very good way to communicate mm-hmm. with that. I think, too, it pulls people away from it being personal. A big thing about humor is like they say you always want to punch up, not down. So you always want to be kind of careful about like where you're throwing your punches, basically, which is why a lot of the videos are my characters always the one saying the stupid stuff in the videos.
Right.
Because I want mm-hmm. I want to keep the self-deprecating humor keeps the focus on me rather than having it directed at the person watching the video.
Exactly.
Because, you know, yeah, they might feel attacked by that.
Yeah. Exactly.
So.
Yeah. So how has your YouTube channel affected book sales and your success as an author?
Well, I went from selling none a month to about 100 a month on average, and it's still gradually climbing up there.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's great. Well, especially since, you know, I'm like a self-published author. So, I mean, like I've already blew well past the average that most self-published authors get. Mm-hmm. So, I don't expect I'm going to see an awful lot of book sales, though, until I get a sequel out, because the book I made is definitely made to be part of a series. And a lot of people are like super hesitant to get involved into a new series. They want to, because they want to make sure that the author is actually going to finish them.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I expect I'll probably see a lot more once I get another book out. Plus also Amazon just likes to stack books together. The way its algorithm works, they like authors who have multiple. That's why a lot of the bigger self-published authors on Amazon, they're very prolific.
Yeah.
Because that kind of games the algorithm a bit. So
yeah, for sure. Now to my next question. you throw out all of this sarcastic, terrible writing advice, and then people read your book. Do you get slammed with your writing, or have you taken all of your own terrible writing advice and thrown it out the window?
Well, I've had a few people email me, and they said I really didn't like your book because I thought it would be a lot more like your terrible writing advice.
Mm.
Because the book is very, well, it's not a serious book per se, but its tone is nowhere near my terrible writing advice videos. A lot of people, too, they go into the book having very high expectations naturally. And two, like, people don't really know that the book came first and the terrible writing advice was based on a lot of the lessons I learned while writing the book. And even now that I'm working on the sequel, it's fascinating. Look at the massive gulf of my skill levels between writing the first book and writing the second book.
Oh yeah. I think that's true.
It's completely, I mean, I think we all kind of cringe at our first book.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and despite all that though, it's still for the most part positive reviews. My review ratio is very good on Amazon. Not as good on Goodreads, but people on Goodreads are always harder to impress.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, still for the most part, it's been fairly well received. There are a few people who like congregate like in the comments section of my book trailer that just are mad and constantly saying bad things and calling me a hypocrite and everything. And, you know, but, you know, and then there are people who argue with them and defend me. So,
it's the price of fame, darling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have accepted that. I understand, too, that whenever something, well, hate dumps are interesting because when something gets popular, everyone's congregating towards it. And if something's not popular and someone comes along and is like, well, I hate this, but they look at it, no one's watching it. They're like, oh, it's obscure as it should be. And then they move on.
Right.
But then like when someone finds something that they hate and it's popular and all these people are liking it, they're just like, what's wrong with you people? And then they get into this weird negative feedback loop where they keep trying harder and harder to turn people away from this thing. But that's the fortunate thing about, or fortunate, depending on your point of view, about YouTube or pretty much most of the internet, that like the more you interact with something, the more you draw attention to it. So, and by hating it, sometimes you bring attention to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you create your own monster, as so often happens.
Yep.
Well, and that is so true, right? You know, if you don't want to be criticized, just stay at home in your little
certainly don't write.
East Tennessee little house and, don't create anything. So great on you. Well, great on you. How, okay. So book two, where's it at? How close are you?
It's hard to say. My plans got derailed by this whole YouTube thing.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
We're liking the YouTube thing.
Of book one has kind of taken on a life of its own.
Yeah. Huh? We're hoping you stick with this whole YouTube thing because, you definitely have something. I don't want to say special because it's, you know, that's not really the word that works, but I'm telling you, it is really entertaining.
Oh no. And like, I don't want to get away from that either because the YouTube videos are very fun to make.
Yeah.
I however don't want to quite give up the whole writing thing because for one, I really like writing, you know, it was my whole motivation for getting started. Mm-hmm. But also too, like a YouTube career generally lasts about 5 years for most people.
Right.
That's you have your initial climb, which takes about 3 years, and then usually after about 3 to 4 years, five if you're lucky, then your views and your subscriber count start to taper off, and sometimes you'll eventually get into this downward spiral. Especially if you like have like a very narrow focus and you just kind of keep doing the same thing over and over again, eventually people get tired of it and they want to move on. So I'm hoping to build up my writing career and my YouTube career at the same time.
Right,
so
right.
In case Amazon suddenly collapses,
right,
I will have my YouTube. But in case YouTube suddenly blows up, then I'll be fine.
Right.
Unless net neutrality blows up everything. So
yeah, there is that. So,
yeah.
Well, cool. This has been so fun to talk to you. So what is the most interesting thing that has happened to you because of your YouTube channel?
Well, the most interesting thing for me is getting paid.
Mm.
That is very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, actually, I make enough money just with the YouTube ad revenue that This is my first year in a long time that I've actually, my account's actually grown rather than shrink. Wow.
We should invent a new collar for you. Let's call it the green collar. You're now in green collar work.
There you go. I certainly hope so. I've gotten big enough now where I'm getting sponsorships.
Oh, great, in your latest video.
So that's great.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you. It's very nice now that I've got people coming to me now. Mm-hmm. So it's such a, that's probably the other weird, that's the weirdest part for me is getting people who are wanting to do crossovers and fans sending me fan mail and I was so used to for most of 2016 where it was just this wasteland, all my social media accounts were just barren. Mm-hmm. And I my writer's email thing was just empty. And now it's the reverse of that where I'm just sort of drowning mm-hmm. in just all this extra attention. And it freaks me out a little bit because mm-hmm. I'm a very introverted person. Mm-hmm. So, the attention is a bit stressful for me because it's not something I'm used to. So yeah. I'm just sort of I put this stuff out that I didn't think anyone would actually watch it or read mm-hmm. it or anything.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you're doing very well riding this wave. You'd never know. That you'd prefer not to interact. But that's kind of writers, most of us anyway.
Yeah, well, because I think a lot of more extroverted creative types, they go towards things more theater right. arts where they're the center of attention.
Right.
Whereas introverts naturally gravitate towards writing because it's such a solitary mm-hmm. venture. Mm-hmm. YouTube is unfortunately not a solitary venture. That's, you definitely have to have a certain amount of people skills and tact, and you have to be willing to interact mm-hmm. and you have to have a super thick skin mm-hmm. more so than I think that even a regular writer would have to have.
I have a friend, we used to sing together all the time. We'd sing duets at church, and I'm telling you, I'm not going to acknowledge I took drugs to get through it, but I really have a hard time being on the spot. And, but we'd sing these duets together. She'd talk me into it. Well, this woman, she's won a Tony now. Okay. And, she is the bearded lady in the upcoming film with,
Hugh Jackman about the circus.
It's the greatest showman.
Greatest Showman.
Yeah. And
coming out on Christmas Day.
I know. I just did that whole green evergreen thing. Anyway, I'm saying it anyway. Yeah. But here's the thing. It's she would hold my hand and she'd have no problem. She could sing anywhere, anytime in front of anyone, and I'd be freaking out. That is not the thing for me. I prefer to sit in, my armchair and write in my robe and slippers.
I basically have to drag her to these interviews. So
and I have this whole nervous thing before we even start. I don't know what that is, but whatevs.
Oh, that's just basic human psychology of going into the unknown. Well, especially for interviews too, because you never know what kind of person you're going to be talking
right.
to. And the kind of personas people put out online are not the same mm-hmm. as would you actually meet the actual person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Black Friday out there every day.
Yeah. you never know. You could be talking. Well, I want to invent a word for that. But people who you meet in real life who seem okay until you friend them on Facebook. There needs to be a word for that. I can't think of one though.
We'll have to work on that one.
Yeah, it's called block, delete.
Unfriend. Yeah.
Sadly.
Just so that we can inundate you with some more fan mail, let us know what are your social media channels and how can we get in touch with you?
Oh, well, best method, of course, is the contact forms on my website.
Okay, and give us your website.
JPBowien.com.
Okay, and we'll have that linked up in the show notes as well.
Yeah. I think at JPBowien is my Twitter account, I think, but I'm not sure because I never look at my own.
Your own handle.
Yeah, my own address and everything. Mm-hmm. Probably what most people go do anyways is just go to Terrible Writing
exactly.
Advice. And I've got all my links there to my Facebook and my everything.
Oh, great.
So.
Oh, yeah. And you guys out there, you writers are in for a treat. You're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
And you're going to you're going to actually turn red and be embarrassed for your own self at times.
Well, JP, why don't you leave us with some of that terrible writing advice?
Oh, well, The best piece of terrible writing advice I can give to everyone is no matter what your genre, no matter what you're writing, always shoehorn in a love triangle in there somewhere. A story isn't complete until, like, whatever potential it had is bled away because you got to shove that romantic plot line in there somewhere. So
there we go.
I have no idea why our culture does that. It seems to be mostly an American thing, but we have this idea that if there's a story, there must be a romantic subplot in there somewhere.
Yes.
I don't know why. Yes. I found that out when I was playing a video game about existential space horror and nightmarish zombies that were devouring people in spaceships, and they had these alien artifacts that were driving people mad. And in the third game, they add a love triangle in.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. No. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly what that story needed, is this exactly. Forced romantic plot line in there, obviously. Man, what I wouldn't have given to be in the executive pitch meeting where they were brainstorming for ideas for their games and someone came up with that. I mean, I could just imagine it's like, oh, he's an exec. We can't correct him on that. So in it goes.
Yeah.
Well, at least Santa's not playing the lead.
Yep. There you go. There you go. Well, thank you, JP, so much for your contribution to the writing community. Mm-hmm. Terrible writing advice on YouTube. You've got to check
it
out. It is hilarious. You got to watch it on full screen on a big monitor rather than just on your phone, because the animations and the subtext in the animations is definitely worth it. So thank you for your time today, JP, and thank you so much for your contribution.
Yeah, rock on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you get each new episode as it comes out. You can find all of our episodes and show notes at calliopepodcast.com. Don't forget to shoot some stars our way if you like the show.
Hey, I'm glad you're still here. I wanted to take just a second to tell you what we've been working on. You know, we've talked a lot about our live courses on the podcast before, and, you know, they are incredible, but it's not always possible to make it to a live course. So for the last year, Angie and I have been working hard to package what we teach in our live courses into an online course that you can participate in from anywhere. The Submission Possible series is a 12-part course that covers everything you need to write, edit, and market your story. There really is nothing like it out there, and we would love for you to check it out. In fact, we want to give you session one for free. Now, there's a link on our website at calliopewritingcoach.com. Just click on the yellow banner there and keep writing.